Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Today is Thursday, May 31st, 2018. It's 11:16 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio here in Chicago. I'm John Williams. If you like the podcast, I hope you'll like my radio show, too. I'm on weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon.
I'm Krista McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune Editorial Board.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
I'm Eric Zorn, the tremendous, amazing, and beautiful columnist for the Tribune. And if you like this podcast, you can read more of me on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
If you like this podcast, I think you'll like traveling with me to France, by the way, kids.
Where are you going? Oh, man.
Hey, kids, the only thing better than a trip to Paris is a trip to Paris that then includes a riverboat cruise up the Seine to Normandy. I'm going to lead a bunch of our listeners. We're going to go next August to Paris. We're going to stay there for a couple nights. Then we go up the Seine to Normandy. We get on a bus. We go to the beaches on the 75th anniversary of the storming of the of D-Day. It's going to be a spectacular trip. It's going to be aboard the AMA Waterways, AMA Lyra. It'll be a seven-night cruise along the scenic Seine. So come with us and stand on the historic beaches during that 75th anniversary of D-Day. We'll also visit Monet's home and gardens in Giverny, Josephine and Napoleon's chateau. We'll stop in Rouen, the city of 100 bells chiming. You'll be able to see and hear Notre Dame. Your tour includes all of the excursions, bike tours, all meals on board, beer, wine, soft drinks with lunch and dinner daily, nightly entertainment, pre-dinner cocktail parties, Paris up the Seine through France to Normandy on the 75th anniversary of D-Day, right? We call Kelly Cruises and Tours at 630-990-1111. Call 630-990-1111. We appreciate their sponsoring the Mincing Rascals podcast this week. Now come on that trip.
You say next August, you mean a year from August or this coming August?
No, the 19th.
19th. Yeah. I'd like not an interior cabin this time, but one with a window.
Okay, is this a Mincing Rascals tour?
Near the shuffleboard court?
Well, I would do one. The Mincing Rascals would do it, but the Tribune is so mamby-pamby about affording opportunities to their columnists and editorial cartoonists that there's no way they would let you guys lead a tour.
I don't think they listen. We can go.
Listen to this, Steve Bertrand. If I understand correctly, the president, just moments before we walked into the studio, said on Air Force One that not only is he intending to pardon Dinesh D'Souza, that's made headlines, he's tweeted about that, but he's also got former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich on his radar.
So the Dinesh D'Souza news prompted questions about others. D'Souza was this anti-Obama commentator, right?
Filmmaker.
Right. And so he was on Air Force One. I'm not sure where the president's going this morning or this afternoon. And he was asked about it, and he said, yeah, I'm thinking of commuting the sentence of Rod Blagojevich. He said what he said was stupid, but a lot of other politicians have said a lot worse, and they haven't been sentenced to, and then he made reference to his term. I think it's 14 years in prison.
He has 14 left. I've got it
no,
here.
No.
He's got seven left of 14 years in jail. 14 years.
He's also considering Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
A pardon for Martha Stewart.
These are commutations, actually.
Pardon for her. Pardon for her, commutation for Blagojevich.
Okay. Yeah, right.
So, which is time served. It's not saying that he didn't commit a crime. It's just saying the sentence was egregious.
According to Steve, the president is saying that what Blagojevich said was stupid. What did Blagojevich say?
Well, I think he was, I'm assuming he's bragging about, or what he was caught on tape talking about, applying the Senate seat. I don't know if
this thing is golden, that one?
I told my nephew, Alex, he just turned 26 today. I said, Alex, you know, I called him for his birthday, and I said, it's just too bad you're not 4 years older, because I could have given you a U.S. Senate seat for your birthday.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got this thing, and it's golden. And I'm just not giving it up for nothing. I'm not going to do it. And I can always parachute, use it, and parachute me there. I talked to Fred about that. You know, there's life after that if I do it.
I mean, that was stupid.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not why he went to jail for saying that.
Plenty of other politicians could have said a lot worse, the president says.
Let's not forget what Robert Blagojevich did. I mean, he was squeezing like the head of the Children's Hospital for donations in order to get funding for pediatric care. What was it? And he was putting the squeeze on a racetrack owner for campaign donations in order to sign off on a bill. It was a flagrant, grotesque abuse of power. Now, I mean, you can't just say it was just politics. He wrote this op-ed for the Wall Street Journal recently where he was just like, oh, I was just playing politics. Every politician does this, and they just decided to put me in prison. Well, that's not true, and I don't expect that President Trump is going to read about this case. I think he's just going to go on his gut that he liked Blagojevich during the Celebrity Apprentice taping, and he's going to give him a commutation or a pardon because that's how Trump rolls. He's not going to study this case.
Well, go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, look at the pattern of you know, commutations and pardons, and this is an egregious abuse of the pardoning power. I'm sorry, their friends and family. It's crazy to me how you can have Arpaio, who had his sentence commuted. Was that commuted or was he pardoned?
He was pardoned.
Now
he's talking about Martha Stewart. D'Souza, he's going to pardon him. Blago, I mean, these are people he sees, and clearly Patty's strategy of going on TV.
With Tucker Carlson. Right.
You know, my husband is probably the only person in the entire history of the United States who is serving any kind of sentence for simply asking for campaign contributions.
How many years should he get?
It's a 14-year sentence, and he never took a bribe, never took a kickback, never made any promises to contributors for any official acts. We never took gifts, trips, cars, watches, any of the other things that some of these other governors have been convicted of, and yet he serves a sentence that's twice as long as anyone else.
Right. She knew that the president would watch that because that's what he watches at night when he's eating Doritos.
That's how to talk to the president.
Does.
You don't need to have the president's phone number. You just need to get on Fox.
However, right, there are a lot of, I'm not one, but scholars who know this stuff and say that the sentence was a pretty long sentence.
Well, what do you all think about that? You think 14 was fair? Don't you think 14?
I wrote a column saying he should be commuted.
I've said it many times on the radio, 14 years. Bad guy, Blago, Eric Zorn, but 14, are you serious?
It seemed like a little bit much. On the other hand, if he had, you know, my sympathy for him is muted because if he had pleaded guilty, if he had accepted what he had done and had agreed to resign, look what happened in Missouri. The governor there agrees to resign and they drop some of the felony charges against him. And this is how it's done in politics, which is if you're an elected official and you get caught, you agree to resign, and that's actually, that counts in your favor. And I think if he had just gone through and pleaded guilty when he was arrested in 2008, December 2008, instead of dragging it out and chirping on the radio and chirping on TV about how innocent he was, and you know, so he'd be home with his kids now. So I don't know.
What's the matter, Scott?
I think the sentence was fine. You have to send a message to these people.
Oh, that's going to work.
Politicians. No, you do. With saying that, you get caught, we're throwing you in jail, and not for, you know, you're not going to Club Fed for 2.5 years.
The point of this, none of this has anything to do with the sentence or the crime. What this is a executive in government who was prosecuted by the FBI and then sentenced to many years in prison by the federal judiciary.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Trump. Okay, yeah.
And so here comes Donald Trump making his case against the FBI and overzealous prosecutors going after politicians for doing political things. I mean, this just is another arrow in his quiver when it comes to trying to dispute the Russia investigation. But
Trump was part of the swamp for many years. He was a donor. He was one of these people that politicians would court, and he would get stuff in exchange. So while I believe, of course, Blagojevich committed a crime because he was leveraging state government to get campaign contributions that is illegal, I think time served is appropriate for the crime that was committed, which, by the way, they never let him play it out. I have some problems with the fact that they interrupted the crime before any payment actually occurred. And so it was a lot of just conversation in his living room.
Didn't they intercede, Kristen, because they were afraid that he was about to trade the Senate seat?
Yes. I mean, that's what Patrick Fitzgerald said at the press conference that day, that he couldn't, as a prosecutor hearing what they heard, allow this crime to unfold. But at the same time, you remember it was a hung jury the first time. They had to take him to trial twice, and they dropped the charges against the brother. They did not prosecute him the second time. So there is some question as to whether they were being overzealous in trying to go after the brother to turn on Blagojevich. They didn't prosecute him the second time.
Well, the jury hung because there was one crazy woman who held out. I mean,
We're not arguing whether he committed a crime. Okay, he did. I'm just saying here. I'm just going to say one more thing because I was covered all. I'm sure all of you guys did too, but it feels a little personal to me, and I it's hard for me to sit back and not think about all the other politicians strutting around, actually earning millions of dollars from their roles in government and getting away with it. And then, okay, Steve's raising his hand.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to go next because I don't want to derail all of this, but I want to go back to the Eric Greitens thing in Missouri. Even before the Blagojevich conversation, it struck me. I'm not sure I like the idea that prosecutors will swap resignation from office in exchange for dropping criminal charges. Because that seems to me like that's giving them a power that they're not supposed to have.
You and I don't have
that. Yeah, exactly.
We'll send you to prison because you did this, unless you quit and someone else comes in. What do you guys think of that?
I think that's a good point.
It's a little awkward position for the government to be in, yeah.
Isn't it possible, though, that everything everybody has said is pretty true? That is, yeah, he was a bad guy, but yeah, they over-sentenced him. And yeah, maybe this will send a message to other politicians. If 7 years in jail doesn't get the message across, I'm not sure 14 is. And by the way, isn't it also possible that it's not really clear what the boundaries are for accepting or soliciting campaign contributions? There's a lot of I'll do this for you if you do this for me and access trading.
It's not totally clear, but it's clear that what he did was wrong. I mean, this
because
is not
because he was caught on tape.
This wasn't narrowly on one side of the line. I mean, the stuff that he did, this was way past the line.
I think a lot of the things that we don't like about him weren't the crimes for which he, for instance, I've got this thing, it's golden. That wasn't a crime, was it?
Saying that, no.
Or even contemplating that.
Some of the horse trading that he was talking about on the tapes, like, well, if I appoint Lisa Madigan, then maybe House Speaker Michael Madigan will pass my budget. Those were policy decisions.
That's politics. That happens all the time.
And
that's
we don't
legal.
Like, I know that. Right. And we are so, it's so rare that we get access to that, that we see it so brazenly done. And we don't like that. And I think that taints him. But I don't know that that's entirely fair.
But it's wrong to say that if I appoint Valerie Jarrett to the Senate, then maybe they'll create some sort of a corporation and make me head of it, or they'll appoint me to the ambassadorship of some country.
Who would have thought Valerie Jarrett was the threat
twice this week.
And the campaign contribution from Jesse Jackson Jr. There was a conversation, now it was disputed, but where they were talking about $1.5 million in exchange for the seat. So clearly illegal, I get it. But I can't get past the fact that if you had a wiretap in a lot of people's office phones who run government, why else do people give campaign contributions? Because they're nice?
Right.
No.
You want something for that.
Because they want something for it.
Is this a grave injustice to Fitzgerald system?
Well, this might be the most justified of the pardons or commutations he's issued.
I think you're right.
But I think what Stanta says is really true. If you look at the people he's choosing, it's such a political use of the pardon. It really is outrageous.
Well, Jack Johnson was probably a pretty
good one.
Jack Johnson was a good one. That should be applauded.
I agree with that. I don't like that these people are at the front of the line and getting his attention when there are probably much more worthy commutations.
Speaking of Valerie Jarrett, we all know the Roseanne Barr story. She tweeted this week an awful thing about Valerie Jarrett. A couple hundred people have lost their jobs. Everybody's turned on Roseanne for what she said. She said she was going to quit Twitter, but now she's back on Twitter.
Well, it was like the trade war. They didn't say it was permanent. She quit Twitter for a little bit.
So she's back on Twitter, and she retweeted someone who said this. Here is what Roseanne has done for America in the last 24 hours. She has brought attention to Valerie Jarrett and her ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. She has shown the hypocrisy of the left. She has shown George Soros to be a criminal. She has shown the dangers of Ambien and Big Pharma. This is how they view people who take their drugs.
How do you unpack that? There's so much to say about that one tweet.
That's not contrite. That sure isn't contrite, is it? I mean, that's
she has been. I mean, I guess you have to juxtapose that with her other tweets where she has said, stop defending me. What I did was wrong. She lost her show. I think appropriate punishment has been held.
I thought it was understood that people don't say things drunk that they don't think sober. And wouldn't the same apply for Ambien? Ambien's issued a statement.
I love that.
Which said that a known side effect of our drug is not racism.
They're the only real winner in this whole thing.
That was hilarious.
Scott Stanis's editorial cartoon today in the Chicago Tribune was, quite interesting along these lines, too. Two Klansmen with their white hoods on, and one turns to the other and says Ambien makes me do the darndest things. Touche, Scott Stannis.
I make me giggle.
I've never taken Ambien, so I cannot speak to its effects. But I
what
I
a bad excuse.
I don't believe that that's true, that when you are incoherent or if you're drunk or something, that you say things that are actually true and on your mind.
It lowers your inhibition. It doesn't change your personality.
In Ambien Veritas.
Well, I actually took an Ambien once, and I had a Fitbit on, and apparently I did get up in the middle of the night and did something for 45 minutes. No one can tell me what.
Serious.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I understand
Let's
that
not
it
speculate.
Does. There are great Ambien stories out there. People waking up with, you know, a duck costume in a subway, and they don't know how they got there.
Yeah.
So, this is not out of character for Roseanne. This is not like...
Right. She's gotten in trouble for
well, that's
borderline
my,
big mouth.
So my question today was, shame on Roseanne, but also shame on ABC. I mean, they're the ones that were taking the check and playing with fire.
Okay, yes.
Knowing full well she said that 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, that's... Which you want to talk about an offense to the people of this country. I think that is a terrible thing if you think about it for a second.
She's a nut job, conspiracy theory, whack job, and nutty person.
Funny actress on TV.
Does the right have a point, though, when they say, and the president, frankly, when he says that they apologize to...
Only Trump could make this about himself. Go ahead, Scott.
Is there a point that's like the George Lopez show where I forget what they called Trump or Trump supporters. It was a pretty vicious name. And, you know, that didn't get an apology or even a
withdrawal.
Listen,
Keith Olbermann has really crossed the line too.
Yeah,
and no,
on ESPN.
Yeah, but he lost a gig at one point. But yeah, he has resurfaced.
I don't know why we have to compare one to the other anyway. Can't we judge this on its own merit?
Yes.
Because then it gets so wildly complicated trying to keep score on these things.
Well, I think first of all, if you're the president of the United States, you are open to more of that. That doesn't preclude that there would be reason to apologize, but you just are open to more of that than if you're an advisor. But I think this is about race. This was a racist comment. This wasn't conspiracy theory or things like that. What this was about race, comparing her to an ape. And I think that's the bridge that can't be crossed.
Well, I think it's disgusting. I agree with you, but and this is where we are as a culture, and I'm going to get howls, I know, but I'm going to say it anyway. We just go from zero to they should lose their job, and I recognize that she's made millions and millions and millions, but anyone who makes a faux pas, makes a mistake, does this, automatically people say they should lose their job. Well, that's how
that's where I went right after this broke, and boy, did I catch hell.
Well, she didn't go from zero to that. She went from like 95 to 100.
Within 6 hours.
I think Scott's got a point.
But it wasn't zero. I mean, I'm saying this is not like so wildly out of character. You have to say, well, wait a minute, what happened here? Because this is not something that Roseanne would ever
have. So you think she was fired for the totality of her sins?
She had lost any benefit of the doubt or any benefit, like, well, she had this was a terrible lapse in momentary lapse in judgment. They certainly didn't give any slack to Kathy Griffin.
Here's what I don't like. So you have some views that I don't like, and therefore that TV show that you star on, we can't have that TV show anymore, is a way of punishing you. And that's the kind of speech monitoring and punishing that I don't want to engage
in. She called a woman an ape. This was not about offensive talk. This was not about political differences. She did a very racist thing. She repeated a very racist view, and that's the stuff that we can't allow here. That is a one strike and you're out sort of thing.
That is the view of most people, Steve. Let's change subjects. Over the Memorial Day weekend, large packs of black youth, 100 or more, were roaming the beaches and streets of Chicago. Police were breaking the groups up. They described them as borderline criminal, and they directed the young people to red line trains and to buses. From the Gold Coast, the youth were put on express trains and buses that ran back to 31st Street, exit on the south side. We're not just randomly picking an L stop and getting them out of there, said a police spokesperson. We're affording them an opportunity to leave the area. The ACLU and others say that it's pretty bad when you just round up black youth whose presence is a little intimidating to you, and you coerce them onto public transportation and send them home.
I agree with what you just said. I also feel like there's no win-win for police in the situation. One of these groups of kids stomped a 15-year-old kid in the face. The video is really offensive. This all feels very campaign-y to me, that the whole city is, we're heading into a mayoral election. Rahm Emanuel doesn't want to have his police department rounding up. What do you do? Put all of put them all in handcuffs if they're behaving. I'm just talking about the kids who are committing crimes. I'm not talking about the groups of them. It just seems wrong every way around.
It's a very difficult situation for police to handle because Kristen's right. You can't. It's very difficult to arrest about 100 kids. Was it 150
in
kids?
One pack
to arrest all these people and to you know transport them and book them and all the manpower that would take. You know, putting them all on a train and sending them out and letting them off a couple blocks from where my daughter lives. I don't know. I'm a little bit
worried. I'm the person
about
that rides the red line, and I don't love that idea either. I can just see Brenda and I sitting there, you know, on our way to a Sox game and go, oh, crap, if they're too dangerous for the Gold Coast, I don't know that I want them on my train.
Well, a lot of questions, we've referred to them as black kids several times here, and a lot of the questions that have come up have to do with the fact that what if these were marauding white kids? How would the police have acted? Would they react differently?
I actually think they have done that for Lollapalooza.
Yeah. They have free trains. You know, just get on the train and go home.
And I think there is a little more tolerant reaction from police when it's a bunch of drunk suburban kids from Wheaton who are at Lollapalooza. So yeah. I get the idea that they
But if they're drunk and they're from Wheaton, they're in trouble when they get home.
I shouldn't have used Wheaton because they don't get drunk from Wheaton.
LaGrange.
No,
this is a civil liberties.
LaGrange, it's the worst.
It is a civil liberties issue.
This is absolutely
issue.
A civil libertarian issue.
But it's also a practical
issue.
Matter, Scott.
If someone breaks the law, you arrest them and they go through due process. You don't ship people off. I have a very, very, very strong opinion about people being hauled off and put on trains and sent away.
Not even though they're minors. And I do think that there you have more legal wiggle room. We have a different standard when it comes to minors, and I don't know.
You're innocent until proven guilty. We go over this over and over and over
but
again.
I don't think they were that's targeting people who were just standing around or talking to their friends. I think they were targeting people whose behavior, and I've seen some of the videos online of the things that were going on Michigan Avenue, and there's a lot of very aggressive kind of behavior was going on. I guess people were
running. They were blocking the street on 35th, right? I mean,
yeah,
they
right.
were blocking traffic.
And I can just see this sort of mayhem group coming at you, and you know no good is going to happen here, or maybe nothing will happen here, and you're lucky, but you really do get a feeling that they're there to at least harass you, and who knows what. So what are the police supposed to do if you're afraid you're going to get harassed? Illinois has this week become the 37th state in the union to ratify the ERA. The federal clock has stopped on that, and it would still require one more state for it to become a U.S. constitutional amendment.
I mean, even then it's not certain because the deadline is passed. They think they have a legal argument to do it, but it's not a slam dunk.
And there are five states that are in the first 36 who have since said, we're not so sure. So what do you do with that? What does anybody make of this? Is this symbolic or is this important? Eric, you go first.
Well, I think it's largely symbolic at this point. Because you do have, there's at least one more state that has to ratify it, and it's a question about what states that have voted to decertify or deratify it or unratify it, whatever the tense would be. But and the deadline issue. I mean, the deadline was like almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was early 80s, wasn't it?
And so I see this as a symbolic move, one I support, and I hope that they can push this through. It just makes completely logical sense that I mean, it's a lot of states like Illinois have equal rights in their constitution like this. I think it's something that's important to say. I don't know that it would have a lot of practical effect at this point. But
Is it needed?
That's a good question.
No, it is not needed.
I'm going to pass this around the table.
It's not needed.
It's like choosing the state.
Year.
Yeah, it's like we choosing the state fossil or something. I mean,
yes, I appreciate the symbolism and having people on the House floor who have been in Springfield for 35 years, so this is a big deal to them. But we already have, I don't know of any state that doesn't have employment protections for women. Our employment and anti-discrimination protections are pages and pages long. Gay people, pregnant women, military officials, disabled, blind, hard of hearing. So this does not change anything, and I'm just too cynical to see this as it's an election year. They're leaving Springfield in a couple days. Yay. I mean, could we actually focus on our Constitution and some things that might need to actually
Illinois.
Impact lives? Illinois.
Well,
J.B. Pritzker's been having a news conference a week pushing the ERA. So, I mean, that's what it's about.
Well, Governor Rauner's been kind of quiet about this, too, right? Not that it requires his signature.
Well, there's a reason for that. It's historic for us Republicans of a certain age. People forget the Republican Party endorsed in its platform every 4 years the passing of the ERA. until the deadline passed in 1976. In fact, it was in the Republican Party platform. So there's guys like Ron or my age who grew up in a Republican Party that actually endorsed this and supported it very strongly.
I wonder why then he's.
Because conservatives are seeing this as
yes.
like it's, and I don't, I'm not crossing that bridge.
It's an abortion rights bill.
Yeah, that it's, and yes.
It's not unlike the way George Bush used gay marriage in, what was it, 2004 in the election, putting up some of those elections in some states for referenda on it. I mean, this would help the Democrats beat up the Republicans if they stand against the ERA.
That's, yeah, in 04, I mean, that's why George
exactly.
W. Bush won, because
right.
Ohio, he barely wins.
He ginned up sentiment over gay marriage.
Yeah.
They won't put redistricting reform on the ballot. They won't put term limits on
right.
the ballot. They won't deal with the pension clause. The state is still not the primary funder of schools. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to get excited about federal ERA amendment.
This
that
is a bit of a bit of a segue into the next into
yeah.
the topic. Is didn't they deal something with the pension problem? I mean, I know the pension clause you're talking about in the Constitution, but this new budget that everyone seems to be locked arms and singing kumbaya about down in Springfield, doesn't that have
it includes
some?
A voluntary program if you are in one of the tier pension systems to switch to a 401k, to get like a buyout to entice you to switch over to a 401k. I don't know that that it's not a big money saver.
By the way, your Twitter handle is Statehouse Chick, right?
It is.
What is going to happen first? North Korea and the United States will come to some sort of denuclearization treaty, or we'll have a state budget.
We'll have a state budget. We'll have a state budget by the time maybe this.
By the time it's over,
start tweeting
yeah.
this out. But
So what am I missing here? I thought that was in doubt or something like that.
I don't think so. The Senate passed it last night. The House is supposed to vote on it today. We will have a budget. I just don't. I don't know that it will solve all of our problems. It's bipartisan. There are some cuts in it. There are some things to smile upon, but it doesn't really do a lot to shift Illinois from the drain circling that we keep doing.
It does, importantly enough, rely on the income tax hike that the Democrats passed last year.
And 15 Republicans,
and,
too.
And yes, along with some Republicans, that the governor has vowed to get rid of. So I'm not sure exactly how he does that math. But, they're going to all get together and sign this budget, but it does rely on this income tax increase that Rauner says he wants to get rid of. So
then what happens?
I'm just saying.
Nothing. It's just it's a sign of hypocrisy.
Does Rauner
veto this? The governor supposedly was. No. No. They want to get home and campaign.
On the cover of the New York Post today is a picture of Donald Trump standing next to him, almost against her will, the picture looks, is Kim Kardashian. She was there to talk about a woman who has been jailed for a very long time and prison reform. The cover of the New York Post reads, Trump meets Rump, the other big ass summit, Kim Thong-un pitches prison reform. I wonder what you journalists and columnists think about that.
They're known for doing their front page looking like this. They did when the dossier came out. Their headline was "Pea Brain" with
Get
a big
it.
Picture of Donald Trump. I mean, do you want me to stick up for Kim Kardashian? Because I'm not going to. If you put your rear end all over the internet and you're nude and you want to be taken seriously, I'm sorry, I have a problem with that.
Well, you did get an audience with the President of the United
That's
States.
That's great. I appreciate she's using her platform.
I believe
to do
she's sincere
nice,
about
but,
this. She does have a
she
cause.
Is.
She spent over two decades behind bars. I think that she really deserves a second chance at life.
But also stop getting naked and putting your pictures all over.
So you don't think that the New York Post has any sort of, I don't know, standard or...
No. Oh, God.
Only based on...
I know what we're talking
because of
about.
Because what they've done
Please.
In the past. No.
Okay. Okay.
This is what
no.
they do.
Okay. CareerCast, which is a website, has listed the about top 300 careers in terms of stress, in work environment, growth, and income. Genetics counselor is the number one job to have. Mathematician is number two. Newspaper reporter is number 218.
Mm.
Disc jockey is 214. Broadcaster, that's me, is 213. So all of us are within five positions, and we're in the low 200s. I don't know what you guys think about
that. I find that hard to believe that we're that low.
We are next to retail sales, loggers, and taxi drivers in terms of what lousy jobs we've all chosen.
Yeah, I don't feel at that my way. Profession right. Really?
Would I rather be a mathematician, which Eric Zorn's family is loaded with, or a retail sales clerk, which is next to us? No, I'd rather be a broadcaster.
Oh,
it's never been a more difficult job. It's never been a more thankless thing, and it's never been a more changing thing, right? The industry is shrinking and salaries are going down.
Well,
but boy, you could do worse by me.
I was at a religious retreat over last week. And I had older men who are the natural consumers of newspapers come up to me, a number of them, saying, "Why can't you guys do a better job?" I mean, it's just like, why do you guys have to lie? Why do you have to? You
know, really?
Oh,
at this religious retreat?
A hostile religious retreat.
Well, yeah. It was strange, but these are our
what
consumers.
What a stupid thing for somebody to say. Did you tell them that?
I tried to exercise.
I flipped them off at the retreat and walked home.
Well, it was a vow of silence, so that was shocking.
They're holding up signs?
No, this is before, and it was very strange and very jarring, and I had to explain to them. Every journalist I've ever worked with, and this is almost a 40-year career in newspapers, that every one of them I've worked with has put aside whatever bias they have and tried to get the story right. They do that every time, and every one of them. Now, we're missing layers of vetting. A lot of editors are gone. A lot of all that's gone.
We're also missing the difference between a journalist and a media personality, a commentator.
Yes. Well,
that's such a blended occupation these days that it becomes very so that's fair. Right, I think the public is legitimately confused about what I am versus what Scott is. We're similar to what Steve Bertrand is, who sits on this podcast and blends to what maybe somebody else at this radio station or newspaper does, where it's pure news. That is complicated. But if the implication is, boy, I'm just going off on you now, Scott, like you said this, if the implication is that they're being dishonest or lazy, you might find instances of that, but the profession is no more mired in that than it ever was. But I think people are working harder now than ever.
And that's why I'm responding to this saying that I'm surprised we're so low. That at 218, I suspected we would have been in the top five because the pressures of the job are onerous to begin with. Couple that now with a very antagonistic 50% of the population that thinks we're lying all the
time. But I think you're misunderstanding what they meant by stress. Stress meaning at 218, where newspaper reporters are, meaning that you have a lot of stress. It's pushed you all the way down in terms of desirability.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Your job
I'm
sucks for the stress you have.
It does
You can't even go to a religious retreat and escape the criticism.
No, I think the jobs of some of the reporters these days is harder because they've got so much on their plates because we've had shrinking staffs. I mean, we're doing more with less. So that would add to the stress. I mean, in terms of like public reaction, I mean, if you're in this business for any length of time, you got to develop a very thick skin to that. And if that causes you stress, you probably should need to get out because it's relentless.
Maybe so, but it is unique time, right? I mean, you don't have... It is unique that the president of the United States daily lies and daily lies about the press.
Yes.
And daily criticizes and ridicules the press, marginalizes the press.
Virtually declared war on the press.
Says that the press is the enemy of the people of the United States. That's a unique thing you have to contend with.
It doesn't add stress to my life particularly. I mean, I think you would feel the same way. I'm sure Scott does too, which is that Kristen and Steve too, which is that this job is such an opportunity, and it is so interesting to be in media that you have to accept that it doesn't have the same necessarily financial compensations that other jobs do, but the daily in and out rewards of being in media are great.
If you want to be in the game, if you every day want to play in the sandbox, this is the place to be. This is the time to be, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, totally it is. Could you make more money doing something else? Sure. Could you have get less criticism, get more respect maybe from your people you see on the street or at your religious retreats, your hostile religious retreats? Yeah. You could say, like, I'm a used car salesman. They go, great. Nice to meet you.
Well, I don't dislike used car salespeople either. I think about this. It's a work environment. They work 6 days a week, car salesmen. Stress, most of them are operating, I believe, almost entirely on commission. The career growth, maybe you get to be a car sales manager, but they're not going to give you the keys to your own dealership. And income. If you don't sell cars, you don't make money. Maybe
that's
people...
stress. Oh, that's stress there.
I quite agree. I think salespeople, in fact, advertising salespeople are right there in the bottom, in the low 200s for how difficult their jobs are right now. What else? It's time for our recommendations. This podcast has been so scintillating that Steve and Kristen have left, but that's because they both have contemporaneous
stressful jobs.
Responsibilities. So, Scott, what are you going to recommend for us? Something you're reading?
Well, strangely enough, I'm going to come back and suggest. Every year I take a 3-day religious retreat. It's in the Jesuits retreat, Manresa Retreat House down in South Louisiana. It's 150 acres on the Mississippi, and it's old oak trees and Spanish moss. But it's a 3-day vow of silence, and you turn off your phone, you turn off the laptop, and you just meditate, you pray, you go to class, and it is remarkably refreshing. And so there's retreat houses here in Illinois. There's one that's about, I think, about 45, 50 minutes outside of Chicago, run by the Jesuits as well. And I would just recommend that everyone take that time, even if it's not religious, to just take a vow of silence in your life and just shut up and listen to the world around you.
Eric Zorn's going to suggest... Nice. Without silence. The less stress, Eric Zorn. You want me to go right now, or do you have
to? No, I'll go. I'm fine to go. I'm recommending episode 2 of season 3 of Revisionist History, which is the Malcolm Gladwell podcast. Hmm. Malcolm Gladwell is a very interesting podcast. So he's an author. He writes for The New Yorker. And he tells these stories, gets into these subjects. He backs into them like these long, shaggy dog stories. This particular episode has to do with football and head injuries. And it's not a new topic, but he comes at it talking about evidence. What evidence do we need as a public to begin to turn our backs on football, to say that it's not right for institutions of higher learning to be sponsoring this activity that leaves people so brain damaged? And he works his way through the argument, and it's one that I've certainly had in my own heart, and I've written about this over the years, why I still like football, but it was so well argued and so thoughtfully done that it makes me think about it again. And it's an interesting time to be thinking about football before, when the season is many months off, and to begin actually just thinking about it without thinking like, well, then what will I do next Saturday? What will I do next Sunday? It's a very thought-provoking piece. Again, that's episode 2 of season 3 of Revisionist History.
My recommendation, it's too bad Kristen isn't here, is a drink that the Petersons served to me and Brenda last time we were at their house. They blended pineapple with cucumber. They put tequila in there. Well, they strained it. Then they put in tequila and splashed it with club soda on the rocks. It's very refreshing. When we first looked at it, it looked way too thick, the blended cucumber and pineapple, but they strained it a little bit. It was still a little thick, but then when you cut it with the tequila, little ice melt and club soda in there, and it's a very drinkable, refreshing. The drink's got a little pop, depending on how much tequila you put in there. It was a recipe that I believe they got from The Chew, the recently canceled TV show, which has made my wife and family very, very sad. So that's my recommendation.
Can we put that recipe up on the Mincing Rascals page?
You can see it here. And Eric, thanks for coming in. Scott Stantis, Kristen McQuarrie, and Steve Bertrand. The Mincing Rascals are produced by L.F. Garris. I'm John Williams. This was The Last Rascals from the studios of WGN Radio.
Wow.
In the Tribune Tower. We will move to 303 East Wacker next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.